Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Oregon coming up, obviously USC at the end of the year, but this is getting to be a really interesting deal. No fans showed up, barely any UCLA fans, but alert to all of Los Angeles. The Bruins are good and fun to watch.
SI's Ross Gellinger.
The Tennessee fans rallied. There is no fan base when their team is good. There is no fan base that travels like Tennessee does.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Now, this is a power trip the likes of which I've never seen. You will not tell us who will play quarterback. You will not contradict my son, the offensive coordinator. We will do what we want, and we will lose, and you will like it.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, overreacting to week 6, and there's plenty to overreact to.
Good Lord.
Taping at noonish here, East Coast. Not sure if anyone gets fired. If not, we'll get Brian Harsin. Brian Harsin. I don't know.
I mean, it would break like a 5-week streak of people getting fired.
Everyone's getting fired, so you kind of wait. But we'll get to you. If you're fired, we'll get to your misery. Don't worry. You're not slipping past us. I don't know if Oklahoma's looking to fire their coach. Before we get to A&M and Alabama, before we get to all of it, I got it. I mean, this is the ethos of this podcast occurred in Champaign, Illinois on Saturday afternoon. Fighting a Lion, I go to 5-1. Should be 6-0, but they're 5-1. They beat Iowa 9-6. But this is perhaps the most remarkable scoring sequence of the year. You're going to have to come up with something, okay? 8 minutes left in the first quarter. Illinois hits a field goal, obviously. There's only field goals.
Yes, only field goals in the building. Yes.
With Iowa, you have to say the 6 was by 2 field goals, not 3 safeties, because you never know.
The only given is that there were no touchdowns.
No touchdowns in this game. Horrendous game. Wait till I read the second half drive chart. And Iowa's offensive woes have now seeped over to Iowa State. They can't score a touchdown either. It's the water. State. It's the aquifer under the whole damn state now. I don't know what, if you're an Iowa fan, like at least a lot of Iowa fan people who live in Iowa are also Kansas City Chiefs fans. So at least you can actually watch a damn offense on Sunday after your eyes bleed on Saturday watching the college game. Just, okay, where's Mahomes? I got to get to Mahomes because this is not football. Okay, 8 minutes left. Illinois takes a kind of commanding 6-3 lead. Iowa fields the kickoff. 7:55 left. They field the kickoff, and Caleb Johnson returns at 17 yards, which is a massive amount of turf.
Big
for
play.
Iowa. They get to the 27, okay? Spencer Petras incompletion. Caleb Johnson, one-yard run. Petras sack by Keith Randolph for 10-yard loss. Well, actually, maybe it's a 12-yard loss. I don't know. They're back to the 16. So they have they're 3-out minus 11. They punt the ball. Okay. The punt lands at about the 35 of Illinois. It bounces directly off the Illinois receivers' shoulder pads, and Iowa recovers the ball at the Illinois 35-yard line. Huge opportunity here.
Petras biggest sack, gain of the day for
biggest
sure.
Gain of the day. Petras sack for 6-yard loss. Petras completion for 5 yards, but there's a false start in the next play, so they lose that. Then there's offensive holding on 3rd and 16. That gets declined. So now they are they're on the Illinois 41 or so. Maybe they're backed up more. Yeah, they're at the Illinois 41. Okay, 3rd and 16. Naturally, they punt again. So this team's got no. I mean, come on, you're over the thing. They punt the ball out of bounds. Illinois gets the ball at their own 14. They throw an incomplete pass, and then they fumble the ball for a 9-yard loss. Illinois gets the ball. Iowa gets the ball at the Illinois 5. Okay, so they've had a punt fumble and then a regular fumble in basically 2 snaps. They are now set up at the 5. Incomplete pass, unsportsmanlike conduct on Iowa, a completion out for 9 yards. Another offsides by Illinois. He gets close, but it's no play. They get to 4th down, and Iowa kicks a field goal, okay? So they have a drive that goes, let's see, they start at their own, what was it, the 27? It yep. goes 23 and then 41. So what's that? That's a
64
yard drive, 12 plays, two punts, minus 21 yards gained on under center. A 12 play, two punt, minus 21 yard, 64 yard kind of scoring drive, if you will.
That's so Iowa it hurts.
It's the most astounding thing I've ever seen. More than when he didn't run out the he chose to take a knee last year against Penn State, even though he still had to punt. Yes. He took a knee and then punted away in the last minute of the game. Gave Penn State a chance rather than try for a first down and get sacked in their own end zone. 12 play, two punt.
And negative yardage. And they scored.
It was one of their only two scoring.
I mean, that sums up the entire Iowa season right there. And frankly, like as much fun as they have been to make fun of, seriously, why will they not play a backup quarterback at all? Spencer Petras, God love him, is terrible. And he's like in tears at the podium yesterday because he's the one having to answer for the whole ineptitude, of which he is no small part, but he's the one up there having to answer for how bad they are. Give someone else a chance. I mean, this is beyond stubborn. This is now like psychotic or something. I don't know. This is a power trip, the likes of which I've never seen. You will not tell us who will play quarterback. You will not contradict my son, the offensive coordinator. We will do what we want, and we will lose, and you will like it. That's their basic approach. It's unbelievable.
So stubborn. Stubborn to the end, right? We're gonna see stubborn to the end. You got to give them this, that whole sequence that Dan just went through. It's innovative. Nobody else has tried it before. So
the double punt.
You know, it's new. It's something new. Yeah. It's just, it's incredible. You wonder how this is going to end, because from talking to people up in Iowa, like, you know, he's not, they don't expect him to make a move on his son. I mean, that's the whole thing. Like they don't expect that to happen. So are they just both going to go down eventually? I guess I don't know. It's certainly a tricky situation. And then Gary Barta, you know, the AD, I mean, he's like really close with both of them. I know that when they hired Barta, there was some issues with, what do they call it? You know, when you hire a family member,
nepotism.
And Gary Barta, you know, stood in and rearranged the pecking order where he said he hired him. I mean, it was so he's in it too. He's in on it too. So it's going to take somebody maybe, outside of the AD to make some kind of move here, because something probably needs to happen.
Please work the portal, Iowa, for a quarterback, or don't, because you're more entertaining this way. I mean, for if I'm them, purposes, I'm like, I am sending love letters or whatever correspondence you can to Hank Bachmeier sitting out or something. I mean, just somebody yeah. competent. My God, somebody. Who doesn't want to be the quarterback of a Big Ten team?
I know.
If your offense was bad, you're 5-1, 6-0 right now. Like, I mean, it's yeah. anyway. Bielema is like, this is stealing money. This is stealing money. I would lose by 45 points if I had this team back at Arkansas. But I'm in the Big Ten West, and I am now in first place. I am 5-1. Let me read how the end of, after that remarkable double punt field goal drive, this is how the game ended. Now, that granted, that was in the first quarter. Okay? That was in the first quarter. So the rest of the game after that first quarter drive that tied up 6-6, punt, missed field goal, end of half, punt, 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 punt. That's 7. Interception by Illinois, punt, Eli and I, a 9-play, 26-yard field goal drive.
9 plays, 26 yards.
26.
Oh, my God. Just creeping
takes
forward.
Takes the lead, interception, punt.
Hey, as we're talking about this, I was looking up Iowa stats. This is the Iowa offensive stats right now after 6 games. Keep in mind, there are 131 FBS teams. Total offense, 131. Mm-hmm. Pass offense, 120th. Rush offense, 127th. Scoring offense, 127th. Amazing.
You know, I'm surprised the pass offense is that high, really.
120th?
Yeah.
But it's better than 10 teams, yeah. And I bet five of those teams run the option. You know?
I mean, if
let's see. Yeah, you got Navy in there. Yeah. You got Air Force.
They're not trying to be offensive.
Yeah.
No, they're 125th in pass efficiency, so even lower in efficiency.
I think Brett Bielema was like, my team isn't any good. Like, we were horrible yesterday. We should got killed. We missed. We had interceptions. We had missed field goals. I think they missed a field goal. We didn't do anything, right? And then we won. We're in first place. All right. Anyway, that is what's going on. In the air. So we watch the stuff so you don't have to and injure yourself. Amazing sequence. We're here to highlight the remarkable. A&M, Alabama, the grudge match actually turns into a pretty competitive game. I wouldn't say it was a good game.
Aggies covered.
Aggies covered.
The Aggies to cover, baby.
I'm done with Alabama.
Yeah,
wow. Freaking!
I can't figure
enough
him
with
out.
This. It's just a minor injury to Bryce Young. Saban lied.
Up to the very end. I announced in the press box as the starter.
Yeah, you knew he wasn't starting if you watched the warm-ups, though.
I can't believe he doesn't value the media more.
Didn't practice all week.
Nick Saban, the guy who stood there and said, "I will not be the next coach at Alabama." 2 weeks before he lied to me, Nick Saban. Yeah.
I don't know if Bryce Young's the best player in college football, although he very well may be. He's the damn most valuable because if Bryce Young's playing Saturday night, Alabama covers. But they didn't. He wasn't.
Yeah.
And A&M in this wild-ass game, going down to the final play somehow, Haynes King is getting beaten up. I don't even know how they got down there at the end. They get the final play of the game. It's first and goal from the 2. They throw a 1-yard pass. That doesn't get completed. Johnny Manziel calls it the worst play call he's ever seen. I mean, they're just chirping Jimbo. On the CBS broadcast, they're just killing Jimbo. There's like these little slighted, another offside, another this, not ready. Why aren't they doing this? They're all over him. Everyone's down on Jimbo for this thing, but they still almost won the game. Pat, you were there. What the hell happened in Tuscaloosa?
Oh, boy. I mean, it was wild. I mean, Alabama gave them every single opportunity to win. And I'll give Texas A&M credit. They fought. I mean, this was a team that appeared to be in disarray as recently as last week when they got housed by Mississippi State. So expectations were low for them from a competitive standpoint. But Alabama, first of all right, Jalen Milroe is a very good athlete who can make some plays with his feet. He is not an experienced passing quarterback. He didn't have pocket presence. He fumbled twice when he was hit, didn't feel the rush, threw a bad interception. 3 of the 4 turnovers were on him. And it's, it's just one of those situations where you add those turnovers in with the missed field goals by Alabama, and all of a sudden it's like they're giving this game away. And A&M just kind of gradually getting down the field. They make a couple of plays, and then there's a penalty, and then there's another penalty, and Haynes King throws one up for grabs, and Evan Stewart catches it over the top of the Alabama defensive back. And it's like, holy crap, they might actually win this. You get one play at the 2-yard line with the game on the line, and then they ran that play, and everybody just killed the play. It was bad execution. I'm not sure the call was terrible, as inexcusable as Johnny Manziel and others were making it out to be. It's probably a harder play than Haynes King can make to throw a pinpoint, perfect timing pylon throw to a freshman wide receiver. You might be asking a little bit much, but Fisher said, and he went through it like this is that was the route that they wanted. That was the route they thought was going to be open. The kid did not run a great route. He didn't get deep enough into the end zone to stay in the end zone, and then Haynes King threw it out of the end zone anyway. So, again, more bad execution than play call, in my opinion. And Saban did a great breakdown on his coach's show of how they defended that and why they kind of leveraged away the others. They took away the other side of the field or as much as they could. And so the throw kind of went where they want it to. And they just didn't connect on it. But Alabama was, look, they were pretty fortunate to get out of there with a win. And if Bryce Young isn't playing next week, look out.
I think he's going to play. They think he's going to play. You know, he didn't practice much, if at all, I think all last week. And so, you know, I honestly, I don't know why he even dressed out. The response I got on why he dressed out was, well, just in case it was like necessary, like it looked pretty necessary and he didn't come in. Saban said afterward he wanted to come in, you know, late in the game, try to help the team, try to save the game if he could, but they wouldn't let him, which tells me that, you know, the medical staff didn't think it was appropriate. So they have confidence that he's going to be back and he'll play against Tennessee because, yeah, you're right. I mean, if they're playing anybody else, I mean, anybody else decent, they're playing a top 25 team, like a true top 25 team. Yeah, they lose the game. Milroe just could not hold on to the ball. And he seems in the pocket uncomfortable, to say the least.
Yeah, it was like after the first two fumbles, after that, then he was real skittish. Like, uh-oh, I'm not feeling the rush. I better move. And he was moving too soon at times. Something. He couldn't figure it out.
There was so much rush. I just thought it seems like A&M called a play, then Nick Saban called timeout, adjusted to the lineup formation, and then A&M stuck with the play.
Yep.
And if you watch later, they showed his coach's show. Saban breaks it down. He says he moved everybody to a different, you know, to force them in a different direction.
Leverage.
They had to set up leverage. They took away the ability for King to run with his arm side by having Will Anderson. You can't run into Will Anderson, right? Everything was so quick. They only rushed three, and they still got the pocket moving. And I think King was so nervous about how little time he had. It was an all-around bad play. But
that was because he had gotten the crap beat out of him. I mean, I'll give the kid credit. I mean, Will Anderson came in time after time after time after time and kept hammering him, and he was hurt by the end of the game. But he stood in there and kept chucking. So,
it was so A&M goes back. They're going to try to salvage a season by beating – you know, climb their way out of the bottom. And they're going to have to do that by beating the you know, Mississippi's. They got South Carolina in a couple weeks. We'll see what A&M does and whether this becomes a total disaster of a season or something else. Next week, Knoxville, we'll talk about the Alabama-Tennessee matchup. But this is probably what has to bother A&M fans. Josh Heupel is in year two at Tennessee, and his team looks terrific. And it's dynamic, and they've got the top 10 matchup, and Jimbo Fisher's in year five, and you're going, yeah, but wait till our recruits get going. Tennessee looked awesome, just blew the doors off of LSU. They tried to get the fans riled up by offering them 9 a.m. beers at the stadium. Good job by LSU. But once again, the LSU fans just didn't rise to the occasion. Maybe they didn't have a lot to cheer about, but they didn't rise. I saw some empty seats. All of this, we got to work on our Friday night consumption, got to pace ourselves a little bit. When clearly LSU needs some coaching. They're the most talented drinkers in the country. But it was a failure.
You were overly optimistic in their ability to rally for the 11 a.m.
They didn't do it.
Ross and I knew it was going to be tough.
I tried to challenge.
Yeah, you see all the Tennessee fans rallied. They
were there.
There is no fan base when their team is good. There is no fan base that travels like Tennessee does. It was incredible. I saw pictures from Tiger Stadium. It was really impressive.
Yeah. So how good is Tennessee, Ross?
You know, offensively, right, one of the best in the country. I mean, without Tillman, their best receiver maybe, they put up 40 against LSU, at LSU. So against a defense that's actually pretty good. It's LSU's strength. It's their defense. So defensively, Tennessee has some issues, right? Go back to the Pitt game. Nobody remembers they had to go to overtime with Pitt. Pitt moved the ball on them. So there's certainly some defensive issues. I have all the confidence in the world in their offense, offensively with Hendon Hooker and, like I said, Tillman. Those guys, and he's got a couple other receivers too. They Josh Heupel does a good job with that offense. But defense is going to be interesting to watch when they play really good offenses, which, you know, Alabama with Bryce Young is a pretty dang good offense. So maybe not what it's been in the past, but it'll be interesting to watch. I don't know what the spread's out in that game, but man, I mean, Pat, I think you kind of mentioned this to me this morning or yesterday, last night, but should Tennessee be favored? I mean, maybe so.
I think they should be. I do. The early lines I've seen is Alabama by more than a touchdown.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I mean, first of all, if Bryce Young comes back, that's obviously a leveler. But
yeah,
we don't know for sure. He probably will. Is he going to be 100%? We don't know. Tennessee's played better than Alabama so far this year. If you take the names off the jerseys, if you throw away the recent history, which is unbelievable, 15 straight times Alabama has beaten Tennessee. Tennessee is 0 for Saban since he got to Tech Tuscaloosa. And only two of them have been even remotely close. Two of them are less than two touchdowns. So, you know, the history says, yes, Alabama, but the product on the field so far this year, I would say Tennessee at home should be favored. Maybe a point, maybe two, whatever, but I would favor them.
Wow. I'm not saying you're wrong, but that is a wow. This is going to be a...
Yeah, I'm seeing, at least on Vegas Insider, 16, it opened at 6, Alabama minus 16 and a half. BetMGM, Sean says, is at 14 and a half. That is insane.
That's got to change. That's got to come back.
14 and a half right now, you can get Tennessee plus 14.
You could have got him at 16 and a half at one point. It opened at 16. I'm seeing on Vegas Insider. It opened at 16 and a half. Man, I didn't see it. I got around too late.
Yeah, I don't know, but that's a, I mean, wow. that's a value play. If that bet is out there, I mean, I again.
Yeah, I was thinking 6 to 7 at the most, you know, but man, wow. Two touchdowns.
I mean, the thing about Alabama is they're just a nightmare to bet because you just don't know what's coming. You don't know what you're getting.
Right.
But they could easily go in there and beat them. Like, if it's 42-14, we're talking next week, I'd be like, yeah, well, okay. these things happen, right? And I'm going to, wow. All right. That's just. Do your research. Don't take our advice, but do your research.
Unfortunately, with Alabama, we've been caught fighting the last war, as the generals say.
I don't know if the lines are fully out, but
based on what happened in the last game. Early.
Yeah, it's a swing. All right, let me ask you this question right now. This team's getting no attention. But Ohio State Buckeyes, should they be ranked number one in the country? Okay.
Yeah.
They are 6-0. CJ Stroud threw 6 TD passes yesterday game. It's Michigan State, but it's at Michigan State. They annihilated Michigan State. Their worst result is an 11-point victory over Notre Dame, who had a nice win yesterday against BYU and certainly played well in that game. We saw the problems that Notre Dame had against Marshall and even not finishing out Cal, but it's not that bad of a team. That's your worst result. The schedule's not great because Wisconsin sucked and whatever, but they're going to Iowa. I can't wait for this spread. what is that?
Let's see.
Spread can you come up on that one? You look it up. But are they not even full strength on this offense yet?
That's the amazing thing about it.
So they haven't played the schedule that Georgia and Alabama have. They have not, like Georgia's sitting on that great Oregon win. And they're not playing their Big Ten opponents are Wisconsin, Rutgers and Michigan State, maybe the two worst teams in the Big Ten. And Wisconsin fired their coach like a week later. But they look fantastic. Should they be ranked number one, Pat?
I probably would rank them number one. I see your point is absolutely valid about who's played a harder schedule. But in terms of just dominant performances week after week after week, I was at the Notre Dame game. They were shaky for a half and maybe even a little into the third quarter. But then they very much dominated the rest of that game. Incredible offense, as you said. Like Jackson Smith and Jigba, who's a first-team All-American receiver coming into the season, has done nothing. He's got 4 catches for 36 yards.
He was out yesterday. Didn't play.
Yeah, he's bad. He's only played in a few games.
Iowa game is in 2 weeks, by the way. Sorry.
Okay, yeah. And it's in the horseshoe. So okay. Iowa will not score.
Other than that, I had that bit of info. Totally correct.
I mean, they've had running backs be in and out. Mayan Williams and Trevion Henderson have both missed a game, but both of them are just fantastic. Stroud is a wizard. So I would rank them number one at this point, and they will be number one in the 40-yard dash playoff bracket.
Well, I did our top 10 last night, and it was a struggle trying to rank Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia, because all four have arguments to be number one. I ended up putting it as Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, only because of schedule. Clemson's got two top 25 wins, one on the road. You know, they've looked better of late. I just think because of the schedule. I mean, legitimately, of teams ranked right now, right, Ohio State's beat no one. No one ranked. No one in the top 25. And that's a problem for me. Alabama's beat, one ranked team, maybe two-ish. But I just, Clemson's schedule, I think, is what pushes them over the edge. But I think you could make a case that Ohio State's been the most dominant. But I just think the caveat there is they haven't played a ranked team yet.
Haven't played anybody.
So, yeah, I mean, they got a bye, like you said, and then they host Iowa. And they won't play a ranked team until the next week, Halloween weekend. They'll play at Penn State, and that will be the first ranked team. Really, we'll see Ohio State play maybe all year
until
they get to Michigan. Yeah. So, yeah, I can just hear the SEC fans right now. I can just hear them about how weak Ohio State's.
And it is. I mean, it is. It is what it is. But you're stuck with who you got to play, and they're killing them. So, again, I don't know. Interesting thing. I agree with you on Clemson there. Clemson dominated BC, particularly late. Another one of my lock of the weeks came through. And boy, was I ever right that BC's poor offensive line had no chance, especially late in that game, 31-3. But, like, you know, when you're doing things like that, you're going in and beating people on the road, 31-3, that's what Ohio State's doing too. You'd say, all right, you're just crushing people. So, interesting debate there. All right, There was an event at the Texas State Fair. I believe it was called, like, what was it, 187, the murder code?
Oh, no. Yeah, 187.
Yeah, yeah, the Red River shootout. Someone got shot. It was Oklahoma. 49-0. 49. And there have been some unbelievable endings in the series, and there have been some unbelievable woodshed beatings. This was got to be one of the most dispiriting events for Oklahoma because of two things. One, you got absolutely destroyed, and you know Quinn Ewers of Texas is coming back next year to do it again. And you know Brent Venables is probably coming back too. Like, this isn't like we're about to fire this coach. Oklahoma's laid some like pink slip slaps on Texas through the years. It's like, we just hired this guy. Absolute crushing. I don't know what you two were thinking betting Texas in this game.
Do we have to talk about that?
All time bad. Thoughts on Red River, Pat?
Wow. I mean, yes, we have seen Oklahoma put those kind of beatings on Texas a few times. Mack Brown had a few inflicted on him. And then even before that, this is, if that isn't rock bottom for Oklahoma, they might not want to see what is. Actually, here's what might be rock bottom for Oklahoma. Second.
I just think you can't sit there and go, well, they've got this guy and we can't, you know, it's like Adrian Peterson crushes us. Well, he's graduating, right? Earl Campbell's, they got Vince Young. We don't. All right. No, Quinn Ewers is back.
Yeah.
And then a Manning showing up. And we'll fire the coach and change. No, you won't. You just got him.
Yeah. No, I mean they will do Johnny wholesale staff changes, I would have to think, after this season, but it's hard to believe Venables wouldn't get another season. But here's this could set up rock bottom. Kansas is coming to Norman this Saturday. What if Kansas is favored in Norman? I guarantee that has never happened in the history of college football. And what if Kansas wins?
Oh boy.
What if you lose at home to Kansas to go 3-4 and 0-4 in the Big 12? That would be rock bottom. This got you close. You could see rock bottom from there, and it's coming up at you fast as you face plant toward it. But that would be rock bottom to me. It is a total, complete disaster right now for Oklahoma.
What is it, 23 straight winning seasons? Going back to
'98,
right?
Mm-hmm.
John, 23 right now.
Yeah, I don't know, if you look at the remaining schedule, yeah, they're not going to be favored in a whole lot of games. So I don't know what happened. Like, I can't figure this out. You know, Venable was supposed to be the defensive guy. They got Levy as OC, right? I mean, he was one of, like, the top – one of the big names of coordinators who could advance to be a head coach coming into this cycle. And I don't get it. It has been shocking. I think that between them and Texas A&M, those are the two most disappointing, I feel like, disappointing teams right now.
Yeah, they got Kansas at home, at Iowa State, Baylor coming to Norman, at West Virginia, Oklahoma State at home, at Texas Tech. Here's the problem with that. The really good teams are all coming to you.
Yeah.
And then the road games are all tough.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, you know, Texas Tech and West Virginia and Iowa State are not places, those are not fun places to play on the road. Not that there are a lot of good ones. This is reality.
I mean, yeah, it's, again, the double pain for the Oklahoma fans is this and watching Lincoln Riley go 6-0 at USC and all of the, you know, the self rationalization in the offseason of, well, we'll be tougher. We'll be better on defense and we'll be tougher because Lincoln was soft and he didn't care about defense. Oh, my God, your defense is worse. I mean, they're horrible on defense.
They're outscored by 87 points the last 3 weeks.
It's incredible.
87. All right. On the flip, Quinn Ewers is phenomenal. Now, granted, he was playing against a bad defense, but this is I just want to posit this. He's going to be great. If we had the 12-team playoff, if we had the setup, first off, this Big 12 race is just bonkers and super interesting.
Yeah.
But a team like Texas this year is the ones I'm going to find really interesting because, and I'm not giving them this because I don't know that I would say Texas is going to win the Big 10, but they have, because they already have a loss, but they can play everybody. They can still play, you know, they still got Oklahoma State and stuff like that. You know, presumably that, and then they could get at least to number two. They've lost to Texas Tech, but Texas Tech's already got two losses. They could get to one or two, get to the championship game with Ewers. And it's the team that has an injury like Quinn Ewers. They might beat Bama with Quinn Ewers. I think they probably do. They probably beat Texas Tech if they have Quinn Ewers, but they didn't. Now you get to the playoff. And you don't care where they lost by three at Texas Tech without their future number one draft pick. They could be a really dangerous team. Now, we will see. I got to see if Texas can do this. But that's the 12-team playoff one that's interesting. We're not sitting there going, our season was screwed because our guy got hurt for a couple weeks. Now we're back and we're really good.
Well, I wonder, I mean, is there any chance they get a mulligan for this year? You know, if they run the rest of the table, if they finish 10-2, they win the Big 12 title game. They're 11-2. Mm. You lost to Alabama by a point. You lost to Tech by three, both without your starting quarterback. I mean, you need some help. Yeah, need some help. But
I just think of this way, in the future, you're going, all right, that happened, but oh, my God, this guy's good.
Yeah, in the future, yeah, they get in as like a 9 seed or something, and all
let's
of a sudden.
Let's go. Yeah, don't tell me. That the nine, right, they play as a 9, right? They're playing the 8 and they win, and then they're going to play Georgia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't tell me they can't win. They play in Alabama. Well, it was 2019 last time. He knocked our guy out.
Right.
This is the team that's going to be, this type of team will be very interesting in a couple years. All right, couple more. Ross, the Bulldogs. Yeah. Ring that cowbell, you got. You got that cowbell? Ring that cowbell.
Cowbell's back here.
Yeah, real. Well, ring it. Yeah, ring it. Give it a little ding, ding. Yeah. What is going on?
Ring a ding, ding. Ring a ding, ding. Hey, man.
Mississippi State. Yeah. Hello.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they got a little fortunate with obviously KJ Jefferson not playing for Arkansas. That was good for the Dogs' chances. And then they exploited that. But they've entering the year. I think a lot of people around Starkville and around that community and campus thought that they could make a little noise and that this was, you know, it was Leach's third year, that this was the 9 maybe get to 9, maybe even get to 10, shake up, do some shaking up in the West a little. And we're starting to see that. You know, they blew a 13-0 lead at LSU, a game that a lot of people around there thought they should have won. And they got a heck of a quarterback. I mean, Will Rogers is shattering school and SEC records. And because he's in the system that he's in, you know, he probably doesn't get as much attention. But, you know, he's a heck of a story. I believe he went to the same high school as Gardner Minshew, who leached out at Washington State from the Brandon, Mississippi area. Country boy who just slings it around, man. He's got incredible accuracy. I was visiting the state staff earlier this week, and I was driving through Starkville, and they told me about how he gets up, watches film at the football building, watches film with Leach, watches film with the offensive staff, watches film before he goes to bed. So he knows how to read defenses. He's super accurate. He might not have the strongest arm in the world, but he's getting it done in big game for them this coming weekend at Kentucky, who may or may not have Will Levis. But yeah, State could be 6-1 heading into a road trip at Alabama.
Yeah, the amazing thing, the thing to remember about Leach, it always works. And it doesn't necessarily work at easy places. At Texas Tech, took him a couple of years, and then they get up and running. And, I mean, they were very strong there. Washington State, he had 3 losing seasons to start, then 9-4, 8-5, 9-4, 11-2, 6-7 last year. He was probably kind of checked out. You know, last year they got above 500 Mississippi State. Now they look like they could be well above it. He's a hell of a coach. He's a different dude. He belongs probably in some of these places where it's harder and a little more off the radar, but he can do it.
Always works. Alabama's got a gauntlet coming up, and this is the challenge for this Alabama team, which is not as good as we thought, that things are popping up in places they weren't expecting. That was a good, hard physical game last night. They're at Tennessee. Then, like you said, Miss State shows up. They get a bye. Then they're at LSU, at Ole Miss. And I'm not going to give LSU got beat yesterday. That's still a formidable opponent. Like, geez, that's a tough next 4 games for Alabama. That's going to be a challenge. So we'll see what Mississippi State can do. They still have Ole Miss, Georgia, and Alabama. But they're playing a reeling Kentucky team that got beat by South Carolina, then trolled by Shane Beamer. After the game, he put on those sunglasses. There's a little dispute between Mark Stoops and Shane Beamer. I love it. Like the mid SEC programs having a feud. We need some of that. We need some of the right. I think they're in the bean pot. Are those the bean pots?
Those are two of the bean potters. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. The bean pot. Yeah. We used to say who wins the bean pot. Tennessee. Yeah, Tennessee's the bean pot, looking like the bean pot champ this year. But what I love about South Carolina, besides I can now call them the Cock Commanders, and I would take no other thing, is Beamer has made them spicy. They're spicy like they were under the old ball coach. Like, yeah. He's going to win and troll. He's going to recruit hard. They're a factor. He's going to be a pain in the ass no matter whether how good they get. I don't know, but they're going to be a pain in the ass.
That's the very least they will be irritating, which yes. Is good. You know, they're off to a good, irritating start with that. Yes. And the Cock Commander himself, Sir Big Spur, whatever the heck you want to call him, was in attendance. And I know people, some friends of mine, who actually had the Cock Commander in their hands before the game.
I don't know. That's how you want to put that phrase.
Yeah, I know, right? Cock Commander in your hands. Good job, Pat. Way to go.
They had the chicken.
Is it a chicken? Is it a hen?
It's what a rooster,
is
it? Right?
It's a rooster.
It's whatever.
It's a chicken.
The chicken is a rooster.
The rooster and the chicken.
I don't understand the chicken.
Frank Costanza, baby.
I don't understand the chicken. I'm with him. Me and Frank Costanza are on this together.
Yeah. The hen goes with the rooster. Who's having sex with the chicken?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. All right, a couple more. Speaking of teams, guys that tend to get it right. Chip Kelly, baby. He's here. He's arrived.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Bruins, yeah. I watched a bunch of this game. Straight up, better team than Utah. At no point did I think Utah was going to win this game. I was completely wrong. Gave them too much credit. They are undefeated. They should probably be ranked close to the top 10. I don't think any of the top 10 lost last week. And they've got Oregon coming up. Obviously, USC at the end of the year. But this is getting to be a really interesting deal. No fans showed up. Barely any UCLA fans. But alert to all of Los Angeles. The Bruins are good and fun to watch.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they play a very entertaining style. That's their off this week. Gives them 2 weeks to get ready at Oregon. That's a huge game in Eugene, yeah. October 22nd. If they win that, look out. Then we really could be heading toward a USC-UCLA undefeated LA battle November 19th. But they got to beat Oregon first. So, but still, Chip Kelly has gotten it done. It's been a long build. It's been a long grind. He and Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the quarterback, they just kind of hitched wagons with each other and said, let's get it done. And each year they've gotten a little bit better. And right now they're quite good.
They used the portal really well, right? Yeah. Running back, Zach Charbonnet. I mean, he had 200 yards yesterday. And this kid, this freshman, Jake Bobo, he's averaging like 16 yards a reception. Now, he only had a couple catches yesterday, but he had two touchdowns, though, I think. incredible to watch. They're kind of the three-headed monster: Charbonnet, Bobo, and DTR. They really are. They're a blast to watch, and that is just a really two really fun teams: USC and UCLA. And they both have great players at quarterback, running back, and receiver. Like they've got it. And I know on the screen during the game they put up those stats, those three players from USC and UCLA. And the broadcast was kind of saying, which three would you take? Which trio would you take? And they might be undefeated heading into that one. And that would be a blast. That in the Coliseum, Pat, or that the Rose Bowl? Where is that one?
Let me see here. I think it's in the Coliseum. No, it's in the Rose Bowl. In the Rose Bowl. They might have to take those tarps off the end zone and actually put people in
them. Yeah, for sure. Those stands. Yeah, for sure. Big stuff. This was supposed to be the year for Chip, right? This is year four?
Five.
Was this four? Five.
Is it five?
Wow.
Last year he did just enough to keep his job. You know, they went like 8-4 and that kept the job. And
remember they reworked his contract. It like took forever. There was a date in his contract where the buyout fell to zero. And so everybody was thinking, ooh, are they just waiting to cut ties with him? You know, when the buyout drops, but he did enough. Like you said, he did enough. It's hard to fire a guy that wins eight games and had taken over a program that was obviously not in a great situation. So give it up for the Bruins. Every week I feel like I'm saying, well, let's see what they do next week. Let's see what they do next week. And they keep winning.
Yep.
I mean, there they are, 6-0. So that is going well. Couple other games, TCU with a great win at Kansas. Kansas was, you know, they had injuries at quarterback. It was great seeing a game day. A lot of fun. Love the Kansas fans giving a standing ovation to their team after the loss. I just think TCU's – I was actually surprised Kansas. This was ended up being a push, but I thought TCU would beat them. Kansas is very good if they played this TCU team like that. But TCU with Sonny Dykes is absolutely capable of winning this Big 12. You know, we'll see what happens when they play Oklahoma State, which, again, gets no attention because I think it's like I think it's like a federal law. We're not allowed to talk about Oklahoma State.
Well, Gundy doesn't do himself any favors.
Huge game coming this weekend between those two. Yeah, Notre Dame, BYU is. Or do you have something on that game, Pat? Go ahead.
I just want to say Quentin Johnson, the receiver for TCU, 14 catches, 206 yards. That guy, they brought him to Big 12 Media Day, and Mark Cohen, their SID, who's a very good SID, is like, you need to talk to this kid. He's really good. And, you know, I talked to him, but you know, it's just kind of like, okay, we'll see. And now, boy, we're seeing incredible performance from him and just from them and the offensive. Their offense is fun and explosive and really good.
Notre Dame, BYU, super entertaining game. I love Notre Dame's Shamrock series. This was one of their best. They went to Vegas, filled the joint, biggest crowd in college, you know, the bigger crowds than they get for the Pac-12 championship game. If it's a new stadium, I think it was an exciting weekend for Notre Dame. Vegas is cool. It made Notre Dame, they had cool uniforms, and then they went out and beat a good BYU team. BYU made a nice run late. It was a great atmosphere. There's a lot of BYU fans, obviously, there. Tons of Mormons in Las Vegas, and it's not a bad drive down from Utah. So it was a really, really good game. Drew Pine is your ultimate. He's like the new Stetson Bennett has graduated to like game manager plus. I mean, he had a 65 yard run.
Game manager plus? Come on. Just say game he's a manager good quarterback.
I'm going to give him plus. It. Plus, plus. It's not like the best God. Western plus. That's my favorite hotel. My favorite hotel in the country.
Kirk Ferentz.
Best Western Plus. What the hell is that? You get like a mini fridge? The Best Western Plus? No, this is okay. He's game manager plus plus. No, he said 65-yard run that Stetson had. He just parted Auburn like, you know, there was no Auburn. Anyway, Drew Pine is your game manager, man. There ain't a whole lot going on, but you know what? Got enough to win. Smart play played. It was a very good win for Marcus Freeman. I think they're turning this around to where maybe you can see some competence. And they've got the – they're not going to make the play. I don't know what their season's going to be, but they still got USC and Clemson, and they've got a chance to be a real spoiler or be part of this discussion the rest of the season for the Irish.
You know, Dan, you mentioned Texas as a team that, you know, in an expanded playoff model that you would be like, oh, you know, they could still make a run and be dangerous. Well, I mean, Notre Dame – you know, in an expanded playoff, would still be alive and kind of control their own destiny to making the playoff. If they finish 10-2, especially with that schedule, they had to go to Syracuse. They got Clemson at USC. I mean, it's tough, but they would absolutely make the playoff. So it's those type of teams. That's why can't get here soon enough to have the field, you know, in mid-October instead of be, you know, 12 to 15 teams, the field is 50 teams.
Yeah, I could give credit to Pine. The first real look at him we got was Tommy Reese screaming, "Do your effing job," on the phone to him. And Marcus Freeman was mad at him and everything, and they barely got out of the California game with a win. Well, as a starter, he's 3-0. And he's thrown 8 touchdowns and 1 interception. He's done all right. Give the kid credit for having poise and continuing to improve as things have gone along here.
22 of 28. He's a smart kid because he throws it a lot to Michael Meyer, which would be the first thing I would do. Okay, what do I got to work? Oh, that guy.
Yeah,
I got that guy. I'm going to throw it to him a lot. All right, we want to hand out the Heisman every week. We don't wait till the end. Small sample Heisman, it's called.
We don't give out one award at the end of the year. We give it out week to week.
It's the Small Sample Heisman on the College Football Inquirer podcast.
Ross, who wins your Heisman Trophy this week?
Well, this one was easy. And the problem is I'm going to have trouble with his last name.
Yeah. I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, the Pitt running back, Israel. I don't know. Do y'all have a
Abanaconda.
Abanaconda. All right.
And the hard part is he has a nickname for Israel, Izzy. Like, no, have a good nickname for your last name. Yeah. Do us a favor.
Izzy.
Think of us Izzy. Clumsy podcasters that are not professional broadcasters and don't know anything. Izzy.
Against Virginia Tech, let me get around to reading this line. 36 carries, 320 yards, 6 touchdowns. Just stunning. I mean, just 36 carries would be enough to stun me. But the guy averaged on 36 carries, averaged almost 10 yards, or 10 yards a carry. Close to it, right? It's unbelievable. Just incredible. So give it up for him, man. Pitt beat Virginia Tech 45-29. And I'm here to tell you they probably wouldn't have won the game without him. So incredible. He's my small sample for this week.
Good one. Pat?
Gotta go a little Maction here. This is incredible. Quinion Mitchell, defensive back, Toledo. From Williston, Florida. Don't know how he ended up at Toledo, but they're sure happy he did. At least they were on Saturday. They played Northern Illinois. He had 4 interceptions. 2 of them were pick sixes. Damn near beat Northern Illinois by himself. I don't remember the last time somebody had 4 interceptions in a game. There have been a few people that have had 2 pick sixes, but 4 interceptions. Incredible. Quinion Mitchell, good job. Rockets win to go to 4-2 and are 2-0 in the MAC. So he is my small sample Heisman, Quinion Mitchell, and look out for Toledo.
Yeah, 2 pick sixes and 4. How about stop throwing to that guy.
No kidding.
There's a guy over there who keeps catching all our – I mean, if you're a wide receiver and you have 4 catches and 2 touchdowns, Yeah, and that many, whatever his return yards. Hell, he might be up for the small sample Heisman. Like, okay, here's the play. Here's your reads. I don't care what your first read is. That guy, he's your last read. Don't throw it over there. Anyway. I'm going to give the small sample Heisman to the Boise State offensive line. Okay? For the second straight week, Boise State has had two different players rush for 100 or more yards. In a 40-20 defeat of Fresno State Saturday, George Halani went for 157. Ashton Gentry went for 109 and two touchdowns. They even threw in this kid, Elian Noah, had like 5 for 28 at 5.6, a carry. Like they were just popping people in there. They rushed for 316 total yards. Boise State is 4-2. This is a program that was reeling at the beginning of the season. Looked like the coaching changes. Hank Bachmeyer, their quarterback, bails on the program to preserve two seasons of eligibility. It looked like the Broncos were going to nosedive. They look pretty good. I know Fresno's struggling, but they are just going with, let's line up, and we're going to move you, and we got this slew of backs, and you don't know who's going to run for 100. So very, very impressive. I give my small all-sample Heisman to the offensive line, Boise State Broncos. Well done, gentlemen. All right. We have said a lot of mean things on this podcast. Actually, I don't think we're that mean this week.
No, I mean, we were kind of relatively nice. We didn't dwell too long on Oklahoma. A little bit. We kind of killed Iowa.
Oh, yeah. That was the Iowa part. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Everybody kills Iowa, though.
Yeah, they deserve it. I mean, that's one thing to say about our podcast. If we are killing you, you probably deserve it.
We care. It's because we care.
That's right.
It's called tough love.
Yeah.
We break you down to build you up.
Mm-hmm.
We break you down to build you up. Anyway, in the spirit of being nice, let's say something nice, maybe. I don't know. Pat, you have anything nice to say?
Yes, I do. I want to say something nice about the improbable showdown in Lawrence that very much lived up to the billing. I mean, everybody was kind of amused by Kansas and TCU playing this undefeated game and like, oh, isn't that cute? Look at those little teams that are usually not in the picture having this the big game in the Big 12 on the same day as Red River Shootout. And then the game delivered. I mean, it was fantastic. It was fun. It was back and forth. It was explosive. Didn't start that way. It was 10-3 at halftime. And then after that, it's 28-28 in the second half. And it's like one big play touchdown followed by another. In the second half, we had touchdown plays of 51, 38, 25, 29, and 24 yards. Maybe that says a little something about the defenses. Maybe there's not a championship caliber defense or a playoff caliber defense in there. But boy, it was fun. Fun to watch. Good teams, better teams than anybody thought. Putting up 992 total yards and giving us a great entertaining game in Lawrence, Kansas, of all places.
I'm going to say something nice about the interim coaches. The interim coaches for fired head coaches went 5-0 this past week. Arizona State, Sean Iguano. Mickey Joseph, Nebraska, beat Rutgers. Brent Key, Georgia Tech, beat Duke. Jim Leonard, Wisconsin, beat Northwestern. Brian Vincent, kind of forgotten, but he's an interim coach at UAB, beat Middle Tennessee, who had beaten Miami. They went 5-0 this week. I think overall, not counting Brian Vincent, just doing the Power Fives, they're like 7-2 overall in the season right now, the interim coaches. So it's incredible. I think out of those, you know, we all kind of know that Jim Leonard, you know, probably has the best chance to get the permanent job. But don't sleep on Brent Key, Georgia Tech guy from Birmingham. He's 2-0 with the Yellow Jackets. And Mickey Joseph's a Nebraska guy who has a good relationship with Trev Alberts. We know he's going to stick around if he's not named the permanent. So there's certainly Jim Leonard and Brent Key are two guys to keep an eye on to lock down the permanent job, because right now they're winning. And it was a good week to be an interim.
I'm going to say something nice about the Carleton College football team. They had a D3 team. They have a longstanding rivalry. with St. Olaf. These two schools are both in the town of Northfield, Minnesota. Literal, not forget cross state, cross town.
Okay.
And St. Olaf's won the last, I think, seven, but not on Saturday. Carleton ends the seven-game win streak, wins 26-7 over St. Olaf, and two things happen. A, they get a trophy known as the GOAT. They get the trophy, they get to bring over theirs, and then in one of the other great traditions in college football, because all these traditions are just so dumb, but this one's, I think, kind of cool. There is a statue in the middle of Northfield, Minnesota, and at the top there is an eagle. And the winning team gets to spin the eagle so that it is facing their campus.
Wow. What a privilege.
And for seven consecutive years, that eagle was staring at St. Olaf. This thing dates back to 1913. Carleton gets to spin the eagle in downtown Northfield so that it stares at them.
Yeah, baby.
Is it the Ohio State-Michigan game? No. Is it even like one of those, like, you know, who gets the axe or the little brown jug? Is it? No, it's none of those. But in the Northfield, Minnesota, 364 days, you got to sit there and watch that eagle staring at the other campus.
You're looking at the eagle's ass.
Knowing your goat is over there. I love stupid ass stuff like this. So congratulations to Carleton College for beating St. Olaf. Get in the goat, spin in the eagle, and join it if you're running to guys all. You're running to the other team downtown because you all share the same town. So point at that eagle. We need more of that. We need more like spinning monuments. Right?
I agree. Everyone should have like a weather vane kind of trophy.
Yes, right? Auburn, idea. Alabama. You pop this thing down in Montgomery or Birmingham, yeah. and it just, or you got to light a building one way or another. We need more of this.
I'm with you. That's a great idea.
We need more of this. All right. That is our show for this week. We will be back Tuesday with previewing what should be an awesome. I mean, we've got TCU, Oklahoma State. We've got Penn State, Michigan. We've got Tennessee and Alabama. We got and others. So huge week next week coming up. And so clear your no apple picking. It's a no apple picking weekend. No cider mill.
Yeah, this is the real thing.
This is the real thing. Be on alert. Don't fall for that if they start throwing apple picking out there. Get it done. We'll be back on Tuesday. We will talk to you later.